Oh, hello, my people. Welcome back. My guest today is none other than Scottish person, comedian and friend of the show, Daniel Sloss. He was playing in Newcastle at the Stand and stopped by for a quick tea and a socially distanced podcast on his way down. This is the first in-person podcast I've done in 7 months, and it felt so much better. Like, I'm happy. I'll record over Skype. I will keep the show ticking over. But fuck me, it's so much better to actually be in a room with someone talking like normal humans. Daniel had a bit of a tough year. He's had unbelievable success over the last 18 months, last 2 years or so. And that all kind of came crashing down when the world stopped. And weirdly enough, I went for lunch with him in March, just before all of this happened. And the 6 month period in between then and now has been a roller coaster of emotions, including him starting therapy, beginning meditating, suffering quite a lot with some ego depletion and depression and a bunch of other things. This is a very different Daniel to the one that I sat down with 18 months ago when I first met him. But I actually think it's very much for the benefit of his well-being long term. And hopefully a lot of the things that he talks about today will resonate with you. If someone who has millions of adoring fans all over the world can struggle when a global pandemic hits, it's kind of reassuring for the normies amongst us, right? Like if Daniel struggles, then it kind of gives us more license too. And he has some really nice lessons that he's got out of it. Some relationship advice, as you would expect from the man behind Jigsaw. Yeah, today is just, it's so sick. I really, really enjoy spending time with him. And his new book's out next year, so we'll get him on again when that is up. If you enjoy this episode, please send it to a friend. That is the best way that you can support the show. The only way that it grows is by people like you sending it to people like you. This might have been how you were introduced to the show in the first place. Someone said, oh, you listen to a podcast, you should check out this guy. Be that guy or girl for another guy or girl. Just put it in a group chat, send it to someone, and it might actually help them reframe what they should have learned from 2020. All right, quick maths. The less that your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have, the more money that you keep. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So to reduce the costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite, and you are improving efficiency by bringing all your business processes into one platform. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move, so do the maths and see how you will profit with NetSuite. Backed by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/modern right now. That's netsuite.com/modern. This episode is brought to you by Crafted London. They are the number one men's jewelry company worldwide. If you have seen me on any of the cinema episodes on YouTube wearing a necklace, it will always be Crafted London. I love their pieces. Their casual wear works well. Their formal wear works well, whether it's for daytime or nighttime. This is the solution. If you've wanted to get some men's jewelry but been struggling because everything sucks, this is where to go. They've got necklaces, chains, pendants, bracelets, rings, and earrings in gold and silver. They're waterproof, sweatproof, heatproof, and gymproof. Plus, they come with a lifetime guarantee, so they will replace your piece if it breaks for any reason during the entire life of the product. Also, they ship internationally, and you can get a 15% discount site-wide off everything by going to bit.ly/cdwisdom and using the code MW15 at checkout. That's bit.ly/letter C letter D wisdom. And MW15, a checkout. This episode is brought to you by Whoop. I've worn Whoop for over 4 years now, since way before they were a partner on the show, and it is the only wearable I have ever stuck with because it's the best. It is so innocuous, you do not remember that you've got it on, and yet it tracks absolutely everything 24/7 via something from your wrist. It tracks your heart rate, it tracks your sleep, your recovery, all of your workouts, your resting heart rate variability, how much you're breathing throughout the night. It puts all of this into an app and spits out very simple, easy to understand, and fantastically usable data. It's phenomenal. I am a massive, massive fan of Whoop, and that is why it's the only wearable that I've ever stuck with. You can join for free, pay nothing for the brand new Whoop 4.0 strap, plus you get your first month for free, and there's a 30-day money-back guarantee, so you can buy it for free, try it for free, and if you do not like it, after 29 days, they will give you your money back. Head to join.whoop.com/modernwisdom. That's join.whoop.com/modernwisdom. But for now, it's time for the wise and Scottish Daniel Sloss. I'm joined by Daniel Sloss!
Yeah, there's no audience.
Oh, there hasn't been. There's no audience anywhere.
No, there is not.
How is it being a comedian during a pandemic? Tell me about it.
I mean, it wasn't. It's fine now. It's good now. Like, some gigs are slowly starting to breed back. Over the past month and a half, I've had probably about close to 20 gigs. And those have been really nice because even though it's much, much smaller crowds than been used to, especially in the past 2 years, it feels like being 4 or 5 years into comedy again. Like, it's, you know how there's some people out there who go like, oh, I'd never go back to high school, and there's other people who be like, I'd love to go back to high school with the knowledge I have now. It's kind of like that, man. Like, I get to go, you know, smaller audiences, ones that, you know, that I would used to play into 7 or 8 years ago, but now I just get to play to them with this, I don't know, this wealth of experience that I have. It's fun. I'm sort of relearning bits of stand-up as well. I'm relearning skills that I haven't had to use for years. And that's been positive, but it's taken 6 fucking months to get there.
Do you feel out of sorts? Do you feel like you had the sort of the off-season yips when you got back into it?
A little bit. Like, it was the first time I did it. It was the first time in a long time that I'd been nervous.
Why were you nervous?
Because I lost all of my self-worth during fucking lockdown. You know, suddenly going, you know, I've had a very, very good career, but especially in the past 2 years has been immensely, yeah, intense, man. Netflix came out, and you go from playing 400 seater rooms to 3,000 seater rooms, and it's an 18-month tour that takes, you know, 300 shows, and you know, it's all very, very exciting, and for the past 10 years, all of my confidence, all of my self-worth, all of who I am, I have gotten from the love and approval of strangers. And it's been brilliant for the past 10 years. It's been absolutely brilliant.
It's a very strong scaffolding to lay your life upon for as long as it's still there.
For as long as it's still there. So it was. If you imagine my life as my personality and who I am as a human being is a fucking Jenga tower.
Someone's just come in at the very bottom.
And took all three and went, do you need these? And I'm like, no! And the tower fucking, but obviously in that situation, what I desperately tried to do was to try and prop the fucking tower back up.
What did you prop it up with?
For the first 2 months, it was bad because I'd been so desperate for time off for so long.
Like, I saw you, I think 2 days after you got back, we went for lunch in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
And that was like the middle of March. It was 2 days before lockdown came in, before Americans weren't allowed to go back to America. Yeah. And I remember because the chick that I was with in Edinburgh had left me at 4 a.m.
Yes.
And I'm like, is this actually just all a big... No. I'm sure that was what the truth was.
Yeah.
And so I'd seen you and you were like, this is lovely. But still, even then, only 2 days after you'd finished, in the back of your head, you had this Australia tour and the book, which we're going to get into. And even then, you were already kind of putting yourself into that.
Well, because I've always got that. So, like, whenever I've had time off, it's always been, like, I've got this next month off, and I know after that I'm on tour for another 6 weeks, and I'm on tour for another 6 months. So I was really good at cramming my time off. Like, I would be like, right, over the next month, I'm doing shit all. I'm sitting in a beanbag, I'm playing Xbox all day, and I'm smoking weed every second of every day of my existence because I've earned this. I worked for those months. This is my time off. I've got this job coming up then. And it's Whereas this didn't feel like time off. This felt like fucking unemployment. Like it felt like just suddenly, like in a time when like the people were throwing words around key workers and key, like crucial workers, and you're like, fuck, I'm so pointless to the world. There's no like
pointless workers at.
Like again, and it's comedians. It's the last one. You go, fuck, we're dead. We're not needed right now. And there's, and yeah, and I was just, I couldn't handle the time off because it just had a nagging voice in the back of my head going, this isn't time off. You're not doing anything. Like this isn't, you know, there isn't a tour in 2 months that you're going to get money from. There isn't a fucking, you know, a show that you need to be working on because there's no audience. And it took me a while to sort of realize what was going on because I was just, man, smoking weed, living my life, bothering my poor girlfriend, just like fucking tapping her on the shoulder, being like, hey, fill the fucking void. I need you to love me as much as 2,000 strangers do on a regular basis. You're busy, sorry, I'll go. And but in a way, also like kind of glad it happened because I had to really look long and hard in the fucking mirror because I'd been Daniel Sloss for it's intensely for like the past 18 months, and then I was just Daniel.
Dan, who the fuck's Dan?
Yeah, I've not met him since he was a 17-year-old who was just fucking, you know, insecure in high school, who was starting to do stand-up as a hobby, and there was only like the slight hopes in the back of his head that he might be able to make money out of it one day. And fuck, he doesn't have any hobbies.
He's a boring cunt.
God, so fucking boring. Because I didn't have, because my life was so intensely stand-up all the time, like I didn't need hobbies.
You weren't even writing, going out to do things to find material for the next show because the next show wasn't going to happen at any point soon.
Yeah, and normally I just got to go to the next city, I get to meet people, I drink, I do drugs, I fucking party, I live the life, and that's, you know. And then suddenly I'm just in my house just going, fucking, what do I do? Like, I don't have any interests. Like, it turned out my only hobby was marijuana, so... but what was really nice, I did start discovering, like... Not parts of myself that I'd sort of suppressed, but parts of myself that, I don't know, when I was a teenager, I wasn't confident enough to enjoy them.
What, like?
Fucking D&D, man.
You really?
Oh, God.
Online or?
Man, all of it. I love nerd shit. The 5 hours today I spent in the fucking games, like a board game shop, just fucking reading nerd books surrounded by nerds. And I was like, this is where I belong.
With my people.
With my fucking people. People that I deny.
These mouth-breathing, neck-bearded incels over here. Yeah.
Well, but because I've been... No, man, the nerds are the best. They're so, you know... So I just ended up talking to the owner of the place just about comic books and stuff for a bit. So I got to do, I don't know, I got to start DMing sessions. I am a dungeon master, so I got to do that with a bunch of friends.
All right, yeah.
And
through Zoom. Zoom.
Through Zoom, yes. And man, lot of fun and like doing like archaeology on the old me and being like, I wonder if this still fits my personality.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, is this thing I enjoyed when I was 17 still fit in there?
And apparently it is.
Some of it's still there. And it's been good. And thanks to fucking therapy and meditation and whatnot, it's been a lot easier now and I'm infinitely happier. I'm glad we didn't do this interview 4 months ago.
Yeah, were you crying, weeping mess in the corner?
Aye.
Do you think that if it wasn't for the fact that you're talented and have been blessed with some like semi-okay good looks that you would really, really struggle in life? Because Dungeons and Dragons, the Wii, like you have the makings of a really like successful incel.
Aye.
But you've managed to like get past that.
Oh, I think I would have, man, had I not discovered comedy, I would have absolutely been a fucking right-wing internet fucking troll. From the bottom, I truly fucking, had I not discovered comedy, I would have been one of the... I would have been a fucking proud boy, man.
You and Gavin McGinnis.
Yeah, man. If I hadn't like got into comedy like and had this world where I just got to meet so many different people from so many, you know, different backgrounds and get to travel the world and experience things, I would have absolutely been one of them. You know, it's hard being a white man. Like that would have been me. Because I would have had nothing else to put it into. I would have just been, because I was quite an angry teenager, and then I mean I've still got some anger within me. Well, I mean, we all do, but you know I got to put that anger into stand up. I got to put it into the performance. All this stuff I had, there was an outlet for it, And thank God, because if it hadn't been, it would have just been, I would have shot up a school, man.
It's interesting that people who don't have that outlet and don't find something in life, I think, struggle with like their internal monologue. And one of the interesting comments Douglas Murray made on a show that I did with him recently was he's adamant that the people who have the most extreme views on the left and the right have never traveled. So it's because as soon as you travel and you start to meet people from different cultures,
yeah,
you realize like they're actually really far. I want to know like a Japanese person, like they're fucking sick. And like, yeah, Chinese government probably needs a bit of work, but like you meet some people from China, yeah, from China, and you're like, fuck, like this is awesome. And you know what I mean?
Aye, this, when you get to travel, you see the humanity that is so common across the world. You go, here's all these people that, you know, they're so different to who I am. And then you just see a mum yelling at a child. And you go, oh, that's how my mum yelled at me. Oh, we're all the same. We are literally, we're all the same fucking species. We're just born in different parts. Yeah, I think it's such such an important thing to travel, but it's such an unfortunate thing that it's, you know, it's something that you have to have money to do.
Imagine if you'd not had this kind of like weird sabbatical break.
Aye.
From doing your comedy, and perhaps you further layered more and more and more and more life and ego. Have you considered this? The fact that the stool's being turned upside down a little bit and you're balancing it on one leg. And then, you know, do you remember Tom and Jerry?
I do.
And when they'd, like, the fridge would be balanced on top of a fork upside down on the floor and then...
Yeah.
And that's kind of a... What would have happened had it have been 40-year-old Daniel, 50-year-old Daniel, like, coming to the end of his career and then being like, oh, 17-year-old Daniel's still in here, by the way, dickhead.
Well, the ego would have become, I mean...
Catastrophic.
Yes, and I say that as somebody whose ego 2 years ago would have been described by some of my friends as catastrophic. You know, a lot of the arrogant things I used to say and still sometimes say, like, a lot of the time I go, oh, my tongue is firmly in my cheek. And upon further reflection now, it fucking wasn't. I was just, it was this sort of disguise of, hey, if I acknowledge how arrogant I am, that I'm going to try and pass that off as self-awareness and irony.
Because even last year, I remember part of the show that you were doing, that you were touring on quite heavily, was breaking the fourth wall about this way that you are with yourself, like my charisma is built around this thing. So it's you are right, it's a level of self-awareness, but it's also only like about that thick. Yeah. It's a veneer that allows you to make a proxy for like self-awareness, but you're right, it's without doing the real work.
It's like when people do ironic racism, you go, but you, even though you're doing it ironically, you still want to say those things. Like that's not, you don't maybe say them with malice or hatred or whatever, but there's still a deep, it comes from an ignorant and fearful fucking place.
It's the same as the people who are the most vehemently anti-gay. They're the ones who are the most aroused when you put them in an MRI and work at play gay porn in front of them.
Yeah.
The ones who can't switch off the arousal, but like the lady doth protest too much.
I sort of keep it in.
How much have you been able to create content then? Is a pandemic like a goldmine for content, or is it quite difficult to turn COVID-19 into something funny?
It's been real hard. I have the worst internet connection in the world. I live in a part of Edinburgh, which for some reason... It's just people, my download speed is 7 megabits per second and my upload speed is 0.2.
Can't do anything.
Can't do anything. And then the pandemic hit and that all sort of goes down. So I really wanted to get into, I've got so many friends that are really good at like streaming on Twitch and it seems to be like a good, it just seemed like it's something fun to do during lockdown. I go, I love playing computer games. Like people enjoy watching me talk for whatever fucking reason. Like I started doing a thing on Instagram Live, which was just day drinking with Dan because I was day drinking anyway. And people were like, what are you up to? And I was like, this. So I just sit and get drunk during the day on Instagram Live. And it's one of the weird things that happens in this fucking life. But like, I think the average viewership while it was live was about 1,200 people, but then it would get like 50,000 views altogether. And you go, why are people watching
you get pissed?
But I'm blessed that people
care.
Yeah, and enjoy, for some reason, me ranting about things that I'm semi-passionate about, but then pretending to be really enraged by them. People enjoy watching, and I felt like I could do that on Twitch, but I just don't have this fucking internet connection. It's finally happening now. I promise you I have the most, and I'll tell you off camera, I have the most expensive internet connection in the UK.
Available.
Bar none. And it's still not in yet, but I hope to... Twitch seems so interesting to me because it's... I think everyone only really knows it as this sort of gaming platform, but having watched what people like Limmy is able to do on it, and people are doing different sort of shows on it and cooking shows, it's just a new platform. And I think in the next year or two, one comedian is going to do one thing on Twitch and the rest of us are going to go, oh, there we go, that's it.
That's the one.
And the good thing about Twitch is it's a direct relationship between you and your audience. You don't have anyone from the BBC who hasn't stepped foot in a comedy club in the past 7 years being like, hey, we know you're great and we know you've got all these fans, but let us tell you what we think your fans want. Do I watch comedy? No, I don't. Am I the head of comedy? Yes, I am. That's me. Yeah. And I'm desperate for any world where I don't have to work with the fucking BBC or any shit like that again. So Twitch seems to be the...
We had a porn star sat right where you are, actually, nice. Not long ago, Sienna, and she was talking about, she's been in the game for a little while, maybe like 8 years, and she was talking about the transition from the like typical porn model working for Brazzers or Fake Taxi or whoever it might be, and like getting paid like okay, but not, they don't get mental money compared with how much they make. And then OnlyFans came along and AdmireMe.VIP came along, and they were able to have direct creator to fan like interaction, the ability to get tipped and make money. And she has decentralized and taken complete ownership of her own earning potential. And now she uses Brazzers and Fake Taxi as the front end of her funnel to be like, I know this will get 4 million plays on Pornhub.
Aye.
Then some percentage of those people will find me. Then some percentage of those people will join my OnlyFans. And now she's making like 10 grand a week.
Mm.
Doing what she was doing in any case, but doesn't have to leave a house. Had to like renovate a room into like this. There's probably glitter everywhere, and like feather boas around, I imagine, and lots of rubber things. But like other than that, she's now completely in control. And it seems a little bit like every different industry is trying to find its niche for that. Like even esports has gone from it being esports, getting paid by perhaps winnings and competitions, to now Twitch. Decentralized you to consumer, and it seems like comedians perhaps might go the same way.
Well, I mean, plenty of comedians are. There's some comedians who are really, really good at Twitch. I've already said Limmy is, I watch his Twitch all the time. He's so good in it. Ian Sterling's on Twitch as well. Gareth Waugh does, he plays scary games in the dark. He's one of the biggest whips in the world. And it's great. It's great to watch somebody who hates scary games play scary games. And you get to scare them during it as well. You can, like, because Twitch has so many of these interaction things that I'm still...
Also, you can send in, like, a ghost or whatever to go and do it.
No. So if you bid, like, 500, he has to play it in the dark with the headphones on. And then you can use bits to just shriek in his ear randomly. So it'll just be a bit intense and you can just... Yeah. But it's that sort of... It's mad, it's the funniest thing ever. He shits his pants all the time and he gets so visibly angry. it's so fun to watch. And I'm really inspired watching people like Gareth and Limmy do these things. And go, fuck, there is that, you know, don't be wrong, I love stand-up, and stand-up, regardless of whatever form it exists in, I will always do it. That is it's what I was put on this earth to fucking do. But if I could earn money from playing computer games and being a dick, I'm going to do that as well.
Why didn't you decide to do Zoom comedy shows? There was talk like at the beginning of the year.
Because that's not my fucking job.
But you could have, stayed in contact with fans, earned a bit of money. I don't know.
I've got a real issue with taking money off my fans. Like, the fact that it's one of the very few things that me and my agent butt heads over is ticket prices and stuff. I think comedy should be affordable at all times. To any comedian that charges fucking over 100 quid a ticket, I understand why you're doing it, but I think it's dishonest. Like, you don't get to go on stage and fucking pretend to be an everyman and try and relate to these people when... You know, you're going, give me 2 weeks worth of your fucking money. And I've always had a problem. It's the same reason I don't sell merch. Because to me, I know I need to get past it. But to me, it just feels like, why am I taking, you've already given me some of your money. Like, I don't want to take anything more for you. I'm just, like, I'm doing well already. I don't need this. I've got real, just guilt when it comes to that shit. Whereas, and also, I'm in charge of my fucking life. My fans do not get to dictate a single part of what I create, what I do. And that's how it works. I create shows that I want to do. I create things I want to do, make people laugh. But occasionally people are like, you know, I've had all this time off. People be like, why haven't you done your fucking podcast? I'm sorry, cunt. What do I fucking owe you? what do I owe you beyond nothing? I owe you nothing. I'm about to drop a name here. But it's David Schwimmer. After the got in contact after my Netflix specials came out, because he's a massive comedy fan, and I was doing a show in LA, and it was my first show since having been on Netflix, and it was at the Improv, and it was, you know, there was a real buzz when I went on stage, and I was trying to hang out with him afterwards, and I just kept going off, and people were like, can I get a phone, and I was like, yeah, of course, because I want to fucking please everyone, and I'm so grateful for this, and I want to just hang out with fucking David and drink with him and talk to him and stuff, but I keep getting pulled away, and I keep saying yes. And eventually two people finally recognised him, and they were like, we got a photo. And he was like, yeah, no. And they were sort of taken aback. And he just kept on to me, and they went, can we? And he was like, no, I appreciate that you're a fan of my work. I'm very, very grateful. But no, I'm talking to my friend. I'm spending time with my friend. And I was like, how the fuck did you do that? Mm. And he was like, man, I'm so obviously grateful with him, but I don't owe them anything beyond what I create, beyond what I do. Like, it's, fans are amazing and it's brilliant to have them, but the second that you feel you owe them something, then the relationship changes and then you resent them. And he's like, and I don't want to resent people that love me. Like, that's not a nice, healthy relationship.
Do you think that is a little bit of a manifestation again of what you said about perhaps that feelings of self-worth coming through? Like, I need to continue to please these people a little bit. Like, I'm not sure if I'm worthy of their support, therefore, like, I need to... If the person who doesn't love the girlfriend anymore but is terrified of breaking up with her because deep down he's not sure if he's worthy, I don't know how it manifests
maybe,
for you.
Maybe. And I think also, I'm so desperate to please people that if I give them the chance to ask me for something, I know I'll do it. So I don't want to give my fans the ability to ask for something because I don't want to feel obligated to them, because I will.
Don't start an OnlyFans, then.
And well, but I've got such a lovely cock.
Did people get sad when they found out that you got a girlfriend? The army of singletons that you created with Jigsaw, did they feel like their leader had betrayed them?
Some of the ones that didn't pay attention to a word of the show did, yes, absolutely. But, my, you know, people who... Man, the reason I also don't go into my DMs on Instagram that much is because... Man, Jigsaw and Dark, an X as well, really fucking resonate with some people, like, to a point where it is kind of cultish, and not in a bad way, but just, I'd never considered how much, you know, material would impact people's lives and stuff, and there's a level of responsibility and fear that I have there that I'd just rather avoid.
Why do you not want to see what the people say?
Because I'll feel responsible for them. Like, when Netflix first started coming out, I was in my Instagram DMs all the time because it was a new level of attention. People were telling me they fucking loved me. And then you start responding, and then you start speaking to people who are going through really, really hard times. You know, some of my fans are suicidal, and they start telling me about that. And of course, I'm conversating with these people because I don't want them to fucking kill themselves. And but that was when my agent was like, you've got to step away.
You're bad. You're bad from the DM inbox.
Yeah,
now.
You can't. So with I've definitely noticed when I don't post about my girlfriend much on online, and that's not because I'm ashamed of her. It's just because she's fucking hideous, and it's just not. because I agreed to this life. I signed the deal with the devil for the life of fame and success. And if she wants to sign that contract herself, she's allowed to sign that contract herself. But just because she's my girlfriend doesn't mean she's automatically should be in the world. But when I do talk about it online, you get some fucking stupid people in the comments be like, oh my god, what about Jigsaw? I'm like, if you actually watch the show, The whole point of it is, I absolutely believe in love. I've always fucking believed in love. My parents have been together for 35 years. There's no divorces anywhere. But I know love is real and it does exist. I just get, I was always annoyed, and I still get annoyed by fake bullshit love, the emulations of love, the fucking cut, the, you know, it's been cut with other things, obligation and responsibility and fear of loneliness. It's not pure, it's just shite. Fucking methy love. and I still fucking rail against that. But for me now, man, this is I'm properly in love. Like, I would not have gone through this lockdown if it hadn't been for, you know, my girlfriend. She really she made me confident in, you know, in the bits of me that I was never confident in before. So most people are very, very happy because they can see that, you know, she makes me happy and stuff. And then also, man, I couldn't give a shit what people say online. Like, from the bottom of my heart, like, if anyone tweets or describes me anything negative, I don't reply because I find it the equivalent of saying no you to a dog's fart. Like, it's so unimpactful.
How do you deal with sort of vitriol and hate and criticism and stuff online?
By knowing I'm fucking better than every one of them.
What an answer.
Why would I give a fucking wet hot shit about what some sad cunt in a fucking darkened room smashed his fucking cheesy fucking fingertips into on me? Fuck off. Like, in what world would that opinion ever affect me? The fuck are you to affect my opinion of myself? Fuck off. You only get to see what I let you fucking see, what I let you pay me to fucking see. Fucking, oh, there's the old me. He's still in there.
Oh, he's still got it, yeah.
I know, but I don't like that. I don't like that side of myself. It's horrible.
But you got to turn it on and turn it off, you know? What was it that you said when we were out for lunch and someone had done something similar, criticised you about something, and you said, who the fuck are you, cunt? My house has got two kitchens.
Aye, but that's a horrible side of myself. That's the bit of me that's not capable of taking criticism. Yeah, what a horrible side of me that I'm like, you know what, I'm better than you because I earn more. That's, you know, that's the bits that always come up in, you know, therapy. I'm like, fuck, where's this darkness come from? What's that about?
Yeah, it's the second kitchen. That's where it lurks. Because you moved your girlfriend in.
Yes.
The tactical implication of that was that you thought you were going to have an empty house that she would keep clean.
Yes. No, that's just a horrible joke I said on stage. No, my girlfriend moved in January because I love her dearly.
But it was quite a good decision given the foreseeable pandemic.
Yes,
you didn't know about.
I was going to be on tour for ages. So it was sort of like I moved into the house and I bought the house in mind for it to be a family house. And I was like, I walked in and I was like, oh, this is the house that I'll raise my children in. So we moved in and we knew I was going to be away a lot, which we were used to, but it was going to be so much less than the previous year. So that was exciting. And then, we were so worried as well because she's got a real job and stuff. So even when I was home, she would have her 9 to 5. We used to have this really fucking funny routine in January, which was I'd wake up every morning and I'd make her a packed lunch for her to go to work because I was home and I'd never been home before and I just got to...
You're a kept man.
Aye. Well, no. People go, you've changed. I go, no. This, I've seen my father. I know my... Like, this has always been inside of me. Like the, you know, the romantic side of me, the kind, gentle side, I just fucking put down for years and years because it wasn't funny on stage. And then it's been allowed to flourish a little bit more.
So you were house husbanding in it for a little while.
Yeah,
punches and hoovering and...
I'd love to, man, it's good fucking life. I'd love to be a house bitch. Like, if in the fucking future, if she wants to say, because she really likes her job, and I'd love to be a fucking stay-at-home dad. What a life. I'm not to any parent being like, it's not easy. I know being a parent isn't fucking easy, but I relish the challenge of it. Like, I'd like that. Yeah.
I can't wait to be a dad, man.
Yeah,
like,
me
there's something interesting about being sort of around about 30 as a man. Everyone talks about, like, it's such a trope to talk about women have turned 30 and she's still single. She, you know, sort of the biological clock state. And you're like, oh, fucking hell, mate. Like, how old's that joke?
Aye.
But there is an equivalent for men. Like, I find myself not doting because that's too much, but children used to be disgusting and I wanted to throw things at them. And now I'm not completely repulsed.
Oh, see, so what you've got is there's a scale that you slide up and down.
I'm lagging behind you a little, am I?
Oh, I've always loved kids. Okay. So, but I think we've increased
careful what you say. I've always loved kids.
Man, this is genuinely something that constantly comes up in my stand-up. Because in the show X, I had a routine about how much I love kids. Unfortunately, I also pepper all of my sentences with the word fucking. So there were several times on tour where I'm thinking about the next joke, thinking about a number of other things, instead of saying, I fucking love kids, I'd say I love fucking kids. And some days I'd catch it, but I know there were other days I didn't. There were other days where just mid-show I'd be like, look, I love fucking kids, man. Because for me, I'm not using the word fucking as a verb. It's an adverb.
It's garnish, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the flavour. Yeah. Fucking this, fuck that, shit off. You know, it's...
Yeah. Yeah, man, there's something interesting, and there's not an archetype for that, and I think that, like, men probably could do with speaking about that a little bit more. The fact that you can desire a family, and it's still masculine to want that, even though you haven't got
it. I can't imagine anything more. And also, why does it have to be fucking masculine? And again, I say this as somebody who deals with his own toxic masculinity regularly. You all saw it come out about 15 minutes ago. With toxic masculinity, I've never understood the bit of it that men can't feel love or shouldn't feel love. I don't believe that fucking trope at all. Like, my dad adores his fucking family, even though I'd never seen my dad cry much. He wasn't necessarily hiding from me, but he never, you know, my dad never struggled to say I love you. It wasn't difficult for him. Like, men can still very much be like, I love you. That's a fucking man.
And still be men.
Yeah, yeah. And if being a strong man is important to you, which it is to some men, and I don't think that's something we should admonish. It's nice to feel strong sometimes. It's a good sort of thing. It's just when your ability to appear strong doesn't allow you those moments of weakness or softness, or that's when it's bad. But this general idea of I want to be big and strong, I want to be a protector. Okay, just as long as you're happy and sensible with it. For me, it absolutely fits in with being a man. I want to be a dad. I want to protect my family. I want to fucking raise them to be good men. That's my granddad was always want to make sure that his son grew up to be a good man. You get those generations that they're like, it's all about being good.
Is that a Scottish thing?
No, I don't think so. No. I mean, maybe. There's a lot of cunts down here, so maybe.
Yeah, you are right. It's I don't know, man. I think it's really interesting, the sort of where men are at the moment. There seems to be a lot of different kind of roots peeling off. You'll have heard of MGTOW, men going their own way, which is basically, it's like, imagine militant feminism and then flip it completely opposite. So it's men saying, we don't need women. Basically, the only way to win the game is not to play, is what they think. So it's men who perhaps have been scorned by women, who are just don't really like the dynamic that's going on. Some divorcees, some men that have never had partners or never had families. And you've got that going one way. And then me and you talking about, like, I can't wait to be a dad. Oh. I'm really excited to have kids. I think I'm going to be, hopefully going to be a good father.
Oh, God,
you know?
Those men need therapy, man.
They're really, I don't know. I see both sides of it, because I see how hurtful relationship breakups can be, and so do you. And for some people, they would rather than deal with the risk of that occurring again, would just say,
no, but that's not. But I don't believe that's what they're doing. What they're doing is they're compressing their feelings to the point where it's becoming carbon and coal in their bodies, and they're using that fuel to burn hatred. Whereas, you know, if you didn't fucking compress it with inside of you, you wouldn't be filled with this fuel of fucking anger.
Therapy.
Man, therapy is the tits. And it's I think it's an absolute fucking disgrace that it's a form of privilege. Like I can afford to go to therapy. There are obviously free forms of therapy that people can go to, but they're difficult to get. It's not available to everyone. It's not readily fucking available. And I just don't think it's, especially this fucking year, man. Like, everyone needs therapy. Therapy isn't a fix to anything. The way I describe it, therapy is just putting a condom on the dick of 2020 before it fucks you in the ass. Like, it's not, it doesn't get rid of the dick. You're still going to get fucked in the ass, but God, it stops some of the diseases getting in. It's a bit smoother. Like, it's a process. Like, it's not a fix. Meditation isn't a fix. It's all a process, man. You just give yourself these tools so that when you're going through good times, give yourself all the tools and all the knowledge that when things do get harder, that you're able to, you know, if you're one of these people that is so bad at asking for fucking help, give yourself the tools so that next time, you don't have to, and also just ask for help, you stupid cunt.
What's it been? Psychotherapy?
No, I just, so what happened was after my tour last year, I lost a lot of myself. I was very, just overworked. I just snapped. Didn't like who I was, didn't like how I was, didn't like how I was treating my agent. Didn't like how I was speaking to people. Didn't like how short-tempered I was. So I just literally emailed a thing and I was just like, hello, and I just like, I fucking don't like who I am. I'd like to start going to therapy. And they emailed back and they were like, this is what we recommend you go with. And ever since then, just once a week. And the first couple ones is like, if you're a psychopath like I am, it's just you playing chess against a man trying to help you. like I'm literally paying this
man.
What
do you want?
Yeah.
What do you want? How are we?
Yeah, I'm paying.
Can
this,
I win?
Yeah, yeah, I'm paying this man. I'm like, oh, you're trying to get that out of me. And he's like, yes, yes, I am. What is this? Yeah,
that's why you're here.
Yeah, if you paid me for a fucking jewel. And but no, for me, it's just been it's been nice to, because it's not that I don't have a support network, and you know, you don't go to therapy just because you don't have anyone to talk to. Like, I've got family that loves me deeply. I've got a very loving relationship. I've got friends. I can phone you anytime I want. We can talk about things, but that's not what therapy is. Therapy is somebody on the outside, somebody unbiased, somebody who is going to like listen and help and just recognize your patterns of thoughts and sort of going, hey, hey, you say this a lot, but that's not true. Like, I didn't realize I had anxiety. My therapist one time was like, how's your anxiety? I'm like, I don't know.
What anxiety?
More anxiety. And he, they're not allowed to roll their eyes, but he did.
They're not allowed to roll their eyes.
Hey, what do you mean? I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't have anxiety. He goes, how do you feel when anyone's late to something? I'm like, they should die. They should be shot dead. In 2020, there's not a single reason to be fucking late to anything. Everything tells you how long it takes to get somewhere. There's clocks on every fucking screen. To be late in 2020 is a willful decision. And he goes, how do you feel when you're late for things? I'm like, I would never be late for anything because it would be a fucking disgrace. And if I do, I'd... He's like, that's anxiety. And I was like, ha, oh, right. And when I realized that, just that small little realization of like, okay, here's a moment in your life where your brain shat itself, right? Where it just had a fucking whitey. Internally, it had a fucking whitey.
Yeah.
You then reflect back on other things and go, oh, I wasn't right in that moment. Or the reason I freaked out then was because of this. For one of the big things I discovered through meditation as well as therapy, and I don't know whether this is shocking news to other people, whether it was just for me, I didn't realize that I wasn't my own thoughts, right? So for so long, because all my thoughts in my head have always been so good and positive, I've always believed them. For the past 12 years, my brain would be like, Sloss, you're the fucking best. And I'd be like, God,
I am the best.
I am the best. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'd go on stage, an audience would confirm it. And Brent, I'd be like, fucking thanks, Brent. Yeah, you're right, I am the best. I'm so fucking good. But my brain would tell me all these positive things, and because of my life was going well, I believed this internal monologue. I fully related to it. And then when lockdown hit, my brain was like, you're fucking worthless and pointless. I was like, well, that must be true too. That must be, it's been right for the past 12 years. Why would it not be right now? So my brain's going, you're worthless and pointless. And I'm fucking sitting there being like, fuck it, you are nailing it again, brain. You are spawn with all of these assessments. Fuck, you know me so well. And then suddenly I'm like, why am I wallowing? Why am I sad? Oh.
It's you.
It's these. It's some of your thoughts are good and a lot of them aren't. And some of them are neither good nor bad. They're just weird thoughts that you relate to yourself. And therapy for me has just been helping me realizing the occasional moments where my brain, I'm just like, oh, shut the fuck up, you stupid cunt, not now. And it's nice, I recommend it to people who can get it, but it's also, it's really, I'd love to at some point in the future do, it would be a dream of mine to get it fucking free everywhere, to get it on the NHS properly.
That'd be so good. Well, we're about to hit National Mental Health Week, I think that's 2 weeks' time, something like that in the UK.
Yeah.
And I agree, man.
I think after this year, we need more than a week.
Yeah, it needs to be National Mental Health Year. I don't know. I think definitely therapy, the stigma around that could do with being fixed a lot. Like the fact that to say that you're going to therapy, most people take that as an implication that there's something wrong with you.
Yeah.
It's like, no, I can just be better. I'm functioning. I mean, I haven't walked out into open traffic. I'm not screaming racist slurs on street corners. Like, I haven't shat myself.
Also,
like,
there was something wrong with me. I didn't like myself.
Yes.
And if you don't like yourself, that is something wrong with you. You should like yourself. You should love who you are. You know, and just because you like who you are and love who you are doesn't mean you're fucking perfect and you're not in need of fucking improvement. But if you don't like yourself, you're wrong. That's a problem. Get that sorted.
New book. What's happening with the book?
It has been delayed because of this, because it's being released in America first, because it's an American book. We want to make sure that we could do a book tour with it, like go out and
How do you do a book tour as a comedian? Do you play a comedy show that's around the book?
Yeah, essentially, it would essentially just be, no, I would just go on the road and do my show and then afterwards just do book signings. And then sort of go to the bookstores around the country. And I've never done one.
You ever said the word cunt in a Waterstones? You could do.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah, you've seen it. You've seen the cunts they get in Waterstones, of course.
Yeah, but how are you doing it in there? You're walking around and, you know what I mean?
I would love to. I would be thrilled to see what parts of the book they would let me read in the Waterstones. It will be released in the UK. Eventually, but once it's, I'm also rewriting it at the moment.
Mentioned you making a few changes here.
I wrote a chapter on. Well, I want to now write a chapter on mental health because in January I thought I was the fucking god at it. I was like fucking, it was one of those that utter arrogance of like, oh look, hey, mental health is very very important for other people who have problems with it, and I support them from a distance, but I don't because I'm perfect. So. No self-reflection, bye. Whereas now that I've been helped immensely thanks to therapy and upon self-reflection and meditation, I want to do a bit on that. I also, just upon a bit of further fucking reflection, there was a couple of chapters in there where it was just the ego was still in there and it wasn't in irony, there wasn't enough reflection in it. And also, I wrote a chapter on, America, and because I do love America for many, many reasons, and I dislike many, many things about it, but I sort of wrote this chapter trying to explain how difficult that was, but it was, I genuinely think I was being too gentle, because my experience of America was as a successful white man, and during lockdown, one of the things I did was started studying American history because I found it fascinating and learning about the country more and then seeing everything that's happened, especially this year. I think I was too fucking gentle.
I think anything that was written at the beginning of this year...
null and void.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you can't expect... And there's something bizarre as well. You can create a YouTube video. I could publish something now that we recorded in January and just, like, title it as, like, was recorded in January... and no one really gives a shit.
Aye. Aye.
However, if you write a book, there's something about it that's like supposed to be evergreen and incarnate, you know? Like it transcends time and space, and people presume, I think it's partly the medium, it's so fucking bourgeois, people just presume that it's like, it's got the 2020 vision, literally. And I can imagine that if you had written that, it would have felt like you'd kind of cemented something that you probably didn't agree with.
Yes, I was so grateful to my publishers. They instantly, Random House, when I was like, I'd like to update it, they were like,
excuse me.
Yes, I'm like, hello, I was wrong about a bunch of things. And they were like, thank God you said.
Has it gone to print? Because it's going to print tomorrow.
They have been so understanding with it. Because, I also have a real problem with being proud of work that I've done. Like, I can't accept them as stamps of times and things. Like, I watch old material and I go, oh, I was wrong then. And I can't put myself in the position. I was like, yes, but you felt at the time and things have changed and you've changed. So I don't watch any of my old shows. They make me very uncomfortable.
You said that I think I've heard you say before that you kind of watch recent stuff to refine your process, but there's like maybe an 18-month window and like anything before that is deleted.
Absolutely, yeah. Dead. I can't watch myself. Fucking, if sometimes, this is a shit thing to say, But sometimes when I watch some of my fucking old stand-up, I'm like, my fans are the dumbest company. Just sitting watching this fucking shite stand-up, this fucking young cocky piece of shit talking shite. And I'm like, fucking, how did people ever fall for that, you fucking charlatan?
Isn't that the way that everything's supposed to be, though? Like, I can't bear to go back and listen to the first 100 episodes of this show. I'm like, oh my God, what's going on? But the thing is, if that's the way that you look at stuff, you know that in 100 more episodes or in 3 more years, you're going to look at the stuff that you've just done now and think, what an idiot. How are you terrible? That growth mindset is always going to leave the previous you in the dust. That is the implication of growth, I think.
With growth and with age should come wisdom. And if you apply wisdom to your past self, you should be able to be like, hey, yeah, go, hey, that was me then, right? And I don't hate that. And I'm different now, and I prefer the changes that I've made now. I like who I am, but I don't hate that person. That's hopefully what the wisdom of years brings, but I just don't have it yet.
Not yet. Maybe 50 or 60. So what's next? Are you able to make plans for the future at the moment? So you got a couple of book chapters to write? A
couple of book chapters to write. The second I get an internet connection, I will be attempting to get onto Twitch, just fucking explore, see what that is, because it's... I don't want to go in with too many expectations. I want to just see what it is and see whether I am good at it. And then hopefully just tours, man. We just don't know anything at the moment. I'm really, really enjoying now, because even though gigs can be pulled at any fucking moment, we had a gig at the Stand in Newcastle pulled last week because just health and safety concerns. That's the sort of world we live in now. I'm enjoying the time at home, and I'm actually really enjoying the time at home now. Now that I'm friends with my brain again, it's a good time. I enjoy reconnecting with friends, man. Because for so many years touring and traveling and stuff, I didn't get to nurture any friendships. Like, it was very much, I said to my friends, I'm like, hey, these are the 2 weeks I'm back, two of my closest friends, the Allies, for years and years, and they were such good friends. I was like, whenever I'm back from tour, do not fucking invite me to your house. If you want to see me, you'll come to where I live, because I spend most of my time on the road. So when I'm home, I want to be home. I don't want to go to where you live. I don't want to fucking meet. You come to me, which is a totalitarian Nazi stance to friendship. But one which I sort of had to do for years. And now I don't. I get to be a better friend. I get to be a better brother.
Just a normal guy, right?
This is
the thing I think a lot of people don't see in success. Like, the price that you pay to be at the absolute precipice of the top of your particular field is a lot of sacrifices that the person who is 98% of the way to where you are isn't, because 98% of the effort is the returns go like that. Everybody knows there's I don't know, maybe 200 to 500 comedians on the planet that are ever going to have a Netflix special within the next however long, maybe 100 like comedians. Like, okay, so to get there, the difference between you and the next guy has to be so, so great.
Yeah.
So that 2% is actually maybe another double the workload to just get that extra little bit in. And unfortunately, that is the sacrifices of 300 date tours and, you know, playing. I remember we were talking, you were saying it almost got to the stage where you didn't feel like a comedian anymore. It was like a performance and time away from friends. And can you deal with that suffering? Like, do you want that as an upcoming actor, comedian, writer, you know, do you want to be working to that kind of a schedule with that kind of suffering, with that kind of sacrifice? Because if you don't, you're going to outwork them.
Aye. And you've...
And unfortunately, it almost becomes like a battle of attrition. Like, we've realized that with the show.
Well, I think it depends on the type of success you want. Like, if you want to be the prodigy, if you want to be the first to do it, or the youngest to do it, or the quickest
for everything,
for a lot of things, then yes, it is about that, and it's about that extra 2%. But so many of the greatest comedians of all time, and I will even put this into most of the other art forms as well, and a lot of jobs, they are the best, not for how fast they did it, but for how consistently they did it over the years. Like Bill Burr, who's widely regarded now as one of the greatest of all time, and in my opinion, rightfully so. Man, he's been doing it for fucking 30 years. He's been doing it nonstop for 30 years, and we only just, I mean, he only really came into the forefront in the past 5 years, right? People go, where did he come from? No, what do you mean where he come? He's always been there. 25 years of hard, regular graft where, you know, he was working, probably making a lot of the sacrifices. I mean, there's so many brilliant comedians that only are being recognised in their 50s. You know, Tom Stade worked his ass off since he was 18 and is now, I think, sorry if you're watching, Stade, I think he's fucking 50 now. He's nearly dead. he's getting the recognition now. I think there's two ways to do it, and I went for the speedy fucking first one, and thankfully this year forced me to slow down, but... I still think that fucking hunger's there. I still, as much as it's been nice to be a bit docile.
Yeah.
I'm not fucking done.
So I feel like that as well. I think a lot of people might do too. I wonder how many of the listeners can resonate with this. The fact that it does feel a little bit like you've become domesticated, literally and mentally, that you can't, I've been relatively low energy, like relatively sort of low charisma, like, who am I going to be big dick to? Myself on camera, or the one guest that I'm speaking to on the other side of this of the show. Like, that's not going to happen. Like, the couple of friends that I've snuck in at, like, 4 p.m. before the restaurants close. Do you know what I mean? Like, you don't have that gas in you so much anymore. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people who get re-released into the wild who are going to have latent energy that's going to catapult them through. And I think that's going to be really exciting.
I do too. I think... If and when the world goes back to normal, there'll be people who have a new sense of fire under their ass. Unfortunately, there's also plenty of people, especially in the arts, who've just... I can't imagine... I think this pandemic has probably caused the loss of the greats of many, many fucking things. People who, in the arts, who were able to do arts because they were able to subsidise it with a fucking job, but now can't focus on their passion because they're just trying to fucking make ends meet. I know so many good comedians who have just gone, I'm not a comedian anymore. Like, I can't. There's no work. And that'll go over to art. It'll go over to, you know, acting. It'll go to all this. Fucking even, not even just the arts. Fucking plumbers, technicians, programmers. Oh, maybe not. They could do it from home.
Athletes.
Yeah. I truly think we've lost... COVID has caused the loss of a generation of greats. And we don't know what the long-term effects of COVID are. I think we're going to have a... generation of kids who, you know, born for the first 6 months of those crucial development years where they only got to see both of their parents. What are the long-term effects of that? The first 6 months of your life is only two phases. What are the long-term, if any? But one of the other long-term effects is, you know, maybe they'll just be in 25 fucking years, a bunch of time when art sucks for a bit.
Everyone's a plumber.
Football's just a little bit shiter. We're like, fucking hell.
I have to say, I really enjoy the football without the fan noise. I just think, because there's a DJ. Have you seen this? The fake noise and the press.
And how good are those fucking like, sometimes they get it wrong. Yeah. It's very funny when they get it wrong. Like, they're like, whoa! Oh no, it's miles off target. Yeah. Mind you, but fans did that as well. That was... You know, the amount of times I've thought much, you go, hey! What do you mean it didn't go in? Oh, fuck.
Yeah. So, two questions. First one, if someone's had some challenges with their relationship during COVID, what would you say, any bits of advice of how they might be able to deal with it a little bit better?
Oh, man. Here's one of the stances I still stand by thoroughly in Jigsaw, is if your relationship requires any fucking effort.
Even during a pandemic?
Man. Me and my girlfriend didn't fall out once. And again, don't be wrong, I know there's going to be fucking people who've been married for 25 years and they're going to be like, you're still in the fucking honeymoon phase.
Just wait.
You're still in the honeymoon phase. Maybe. Or maybe I didn't fall in love with a cunt. Who knows? We'll never know. We'll know in 25 years' time. No advice. I'm in a shitty, not a shitty position, I'm in a really good position where I didn't have to work on my
non-representative position.
And also, I thoroughly recommend people watch Jigsaw during quarantine.
Where can they get that now?
It's still on Netflix. Still on Netflix.
Awesome. Yeah. That's quite a long time. It's been on 2 years.
I think they have it forever.
Is it?
I don't know. I'm genuinely not sure.
Fuck me.
I don't know. Where, I mean, where else would it go?
Well, I don't know. I don't know how long I had it up there.
I don't know how long it's up there.
Final thing. Lessons from 2020. What's going to be the biggest lesson that you take away from 2020?
And had I heard myself say this in January, I would have knocked myself out. But just fucking take better care of yourself. Take responsibility for your physical health. Take responsibility for your mental health. And this year, it took a real fucking knock to the confidence. But I'm glad that, you know, that I did have the courage and the strength to go to therapy and to seek help. That, you know, I did stick to, you know, meditation and, you know, learning about myself and just deciding and going, fuck, I need to slow down. Like last year was really hard, and admitting that I was having a hard time, which is hard to do because we're also reluctant to admit we're having a hard time because everyone's having a hard time. So you don't want to admit it. So you go, oh, I know all these other people in a worse position. So how dare I think I'm in a bad position? And that's not true for anyone. That's not how the world works. And if you think that way, get out of your fucking head. You're allowed to be as miserable as you want to be. But do what you can to not feel that way. We all deserve to be happy.
I love it, man. It's an oddly balanced and positive way for us to finish one of these ones. It's usually berating people that we don't like.
Well, let's come back in a year's time when Glad Comedy's back and I'll be like, listen here, fuckers, I'm back. I'm confident again. You're all fucking pussies.
Remember all of that stuff that I said last year? Yeah. He was a dick.
Tell you what, turns out you shouldn't love yourself. You should just fucking love me.
Oh, man. So, book out next year.
Book out next year.
It's Twitch. Have you got Twitch yet?
I am, yes. It's Daniel Sloss, I think. Or Daniel underscore Sloss. It's not a common name. You'll find me. But I don't have any followers on it yet. And the account's barely set up because, once again, slowest internet connection in the world still.
Mm-hmm. Where else? Instagram?
Instagram. Also.
Watch Jigsaw.
Yeah, go on Netflix to watch Dark and Jigsaw. And also, if you follow, go on my website, danielsloss.com. We're adding tour dates. We're not tour dates. We're adding dates all the time. We'll be doing spots in random places over the next couple of months. And come see me while I'm humble again.
What a unique opportunity.
I know. Yeah, small beard. There's people watching this being like, I can't believe he thinks he was humble.
Man, thank you so much.
As always. Shouldn't have done that. Illegal. Absolutely illegal, this.